Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today, my guest is Shane Jones. First, a couple of announcements. Forbidden Knowledge News is always available on Rockfin, Minds, Odyssey, Rumble, all podcast platforms. Check out Rockfin. That's where you get our premium content. You also get all the premium and free content from every creator on Rockfin. Go to rockfin.com/FKNplus or click the link in the description to sign up. Our website is forbiddenknowledge.news, also the home of the Forbidden Knowledge Network. We feature some amazing podcasts there from our community. Go check that out. Finally, something I am very excited about. We are happy to introduce you to Ascent Nutrition, which is founded by my good friend Lance Shuttler. Lance is making a huge difference in this community with Ascent Nutrition. They have a new product that is sweeping the nation, pine pollen. Now, last year, several prominent scientists started speaking out about the power of pine trees and the benefits they can offer to us. Ascent Nutrition offers raw, wildcrafted pine pollen. Now, pine pollen contains 200 nutrients in it, making it a true superfood. It's nature's highest source of phytohormones, which support hormone and libido health for men and women. Pine pollen also supports brain health, detoxification, as well as many facets of cardiovascular health. Ascent Nutrition is your premier source for pine pollen, as well as many other unique products. Their pine pollen is selling out fast. It's literally flying off the shelf. Ascent Nutrition is on a mission to offer deeply transformative and helpful nutrients to as many people as possible and to help bring about a great collective shift in human consciousness and health. A portion of the profits are donated to holistic healing programs and selected rape crisis centers that help people who have been trafficked, raped, and sexually abused. To order your pine pollen supply and review the menu of health supplements that Ascent Nutrition has to offer, use that link in the description or visit goascentnutrition.com and use coupon code FKN to get 10% off your entire purchase. Today, I want to welcome Shane Jones. He is host and founder of Inquiries of Reality podcast. He is creating an open-minded podcast for open-minded people to have conversation about alternative topics with no filter or judgment. Shane, welcome. How you doing?
Not too bad. How about yourself, man?
Man, I'm doing great. This is going to be awesome. I love what has happened to digital entertainment, mainly podcasting. When I first started, not so much to choose from. You know, in our conspiracy realm, we had like Leak Project, Veritas, Higher Side Chats, a few shows like that. But Now, there is so many wonderful shows, like yours, to choose from. Good shows, too. It's very encouraging. Entertainment is changing in that people, they want to hear true, honest people. They want the ability to decipher the information without being told how to feel about it from, you know, mainstream media. I really love the show. I love what you're doing. Let's start out with telling us more about yourself and what led you to start the show.
Well, as far as my show goes, I'll say the premise of my show first and then kind of build on past that. Yeah. The premise of my show is that I'm trying to create an open-minded area for open-minded people to have conversations about alternative topics with no judgment and no filter. So it's a little mix of everything as far as anything that's not getting covered by the mainstream media. So, you know, you'll find cryptids, supernatural stuff, spiritual stuff, just a wide variety of stuff. So coming from that, as far as for me, I just had a lot of questions growing up. So I essentially started my show based off of that. That's where you get the name Inquiries of Our Reality, which is because I had a lot of inquiries about our reality. And having this gives me the opportunity to finally ask a lot of people the questions that I normally wouldn't get to ask because, you know, you hit up a scientist or an author and you don't normally have an excuse just to sit there and have a conversation with them. But having a means of a podcast means I can have conversations with these great people. I can have conversations with other podcasters, have a fun time while doing it, and everybody can listen and hopefully get a little bit red-pilled or, you know, just a little bit of an alternative idea into their head. And it definitely helps, I feel, to make it so that you can decipher through the bullshit as far as information goes, because nowadays, it's not that there's a problem with not having information. The problem is that there's so much information that it's flooded that you have to learn how to sift through it and figure out what stuff is the lies and what stuff's the truth. And that's what our community's for, man. And we all have our different setups for our shows to go about the same kind of method. But right, as far as like how I got started, I guess I'll go into my life story a little bit later, but I'll just start off with just the podcast aspect. I was a listener for a long time. And like I was saying, I had a lot of questions that I wanted answered. So I ended up hitting up Mark from My Family Thinks I'm Crazy and said, hey, man, I really want to get into podcasting. Would you be interested in having me on as like a co-host for an episode just so I can get a feel for it? And he responds back with, I'll do you one better. I'm going to have you on as a guest in a couple weeks.
Now, so how long ago was this? I know Mark recently started a show. What, when was it? A couple of years ago?
Say, believe it or not, I just started my show up probably going on about 2 months ago now.
Oh,
so
wow.
I really got the ball rolling.
That's sooner than I thought. Yeah.
See, I got like, as of today, I had like 650 listens. So, I mean, that's pretty substantial.
That's amazing,
I feel,
man. Yeah.
Started in 2 months. But as soon as he said he was going to have me on as a guest, you know, I started getting the ball rolling. So I started getting all my stuff together. I started contacting all these guests, started getting the mentality of the worst answer I can get is a no. So I might as well just go for it. Because if the ball is already rolling, I might as well keep it rolling instead of trying to stop it. So I got everything together, got some artwork together. Worked on my radio voice a little bit. I had radio experience in high school, so that definitely helped. But as everybody's listening to my podcast, I'm sure you'll notice a difference in my patterns of speech as far as not using a lot of ums and just carrying the conversation a little bit better. But it's a work in progress. I'm getting there, and I hope everybody enjoys what they're hearing.
For sure, man. Yeah, that's very, very similar to my journey. And man, just a couple of months, you're doing, that's amazing. To reach out to guests and just do it like you're doing, that's the way to do it, man. You can't go into it with any doubts or thinking, oh, you know, they won't come on my show. Believe it or not, you know, some of the biggest names out there, they're just the nicest people, and they're happy to do it. And I found that throughout my journey, and I'm grateful, you know, for people like that, of course. And you were talking about, you know, just how early on you just wanted somebody to talk to. And that was the same for me, man. I just, whenever I first started, we talked about this whenever I came on your show. I wanted to get some of this stuff off my chest. You know, this is crazy shit. When you first start learning about it, you want to talk to some people. But you learn pretty quickly that you can't just talk to anybody. You can't just talk to anybody in the street, your friends, your family, or you'll definitely be seen as the black sheep or thought of as crazy, right?
As soon as you bring up the psychedelic realm, everybody thinks you're schizophrenic or something, too.
Yes, man. Now, well, speaking of psychedelics, I know we talked about this quite a bit on your show. This is a topic that I love. And psychedelics, it was a really one of the huge, I'd say a key aspect to my journey, and it was something that I owe a lot to from what I've learned about myself, where I am now. I owe a lot to psychedelics, because I don't think I would be here if it wasn't for the journeys that I had and the things that I've learned throughout my journey. So tell us a little bit about yours and, you know, how psychedelics were tied in.
Well, I'll start from the beginning of the story, and then I'll lead into the psychedelic spot and then bring it into where I am now. Starting as a kid, when I was a very young kid, I don't remember exactly when this started happening, but I would go to sleep and then I would wake up and see myself sleeping. So it was almost like I left my body, almost like I used to, like I call it dream traveling. I'm sure everybody has a bunch of different terms for it, but I didn't quite understand what it was as a kid. And I always felt like something was watching me, but not in a, like in a way of something that was going to hurt me, but just something was watching me, like it was curious from a distance. So directly after I did this, every single time I would get sleep paralysis. So that kind of became my cue where I knew that I had dream traveled, was when I'd get sleep paralysis directly after. So going a little bit farther into the journey here, when I was a teenager, everybody has their dark times as a teenager, you know, a lot of mixed up emotions, a lot of crazy stuff going on. So I'd continue doing these dreams, but when I was in there, instead of it being like a presence that felt like it was watching me, like it was curious, it started becoming more of like a dark, ominous kind of a feeling during these times. And when I would get the sleep paralysis directly after, I would see like dark shadow figures moving across the walls and stuff, which in my room at that time, I'd always had the window closed. I didn't have any lights going into my room. Like there's no reason for there to be moving shadows, especially right after that. That just made it extra fishy, especially because I felt like something was watching me the whole time. So before, or I guess, let's see, where do I add this part in here? So I went to this one place, and this will coordinate into the story later on. I never went anywhere crazy. It was mainly just I would see myself sleeping. I'd be in my room. I'd just be in places I was familiar with. But this one particular time, when I did it, I went to this place, and it was, best way to describe it, like the black darkness of space. And then there was like a purple like nebula or galaxy, and I was inside of that, but I wasn't really standing on anything, but I wasn't really floating either. I was just kind of existing within it. And at the time, I figured it was a dream, except the weird part was when I woke back up, I got sleep paralysis directly after. So that's when it started making me question if this is actually a place that I went to or if it was a dream. So this went on for a little bit as far as just the having like the weird dreams and stuff. So all of a sudden, one day, it just kind of stopped. And at that point, I stopped remembering my dreams, but I would still get the sleep paralysis every once in a while. So it still kind of made me question whether or not I was still doing it, and I just didn't remember it. But when I did have dreams, it wasn't me ever necessarily dream traveling, but they'd be just extremely vivid dreams that I'd remember every detail of it. And this would only happen maybe every couple months. So later on, I end up getting with my girlfriend that I'm with now. And I never really told her about all this kind of stuff that I went through growing up. So there was one particular night I was sitting watching TV. She was sleeping next to me, and I heard a boom from the stairs. So she flies up, and I look at her, and she goes, "Whoa, I fell down the stairs in my dream." And I go, "Oh, that's weird, because I heard a boom by the stairs." And then she gave me this funny look. So after that point, I had to kind of explain to her what was going on, because I'd also heard stories about people that dream travel also bringing other people into dream traveling that are around them, like connecting on the same frequency kind of a thing. So I explained all these dreams to her. I started kind of getting her a little bit red-pilled, so to speak, started introducing her to all these different other topics and stuff. But I would still get sleep paralysis every once in a while, and it still happens. But again, I still don't really remember the dreams. So connecting back to the story a little bit earlier about that weird place that I saw, my girlfriend that I'm with currently and I, we have our first kid. And then later on, 6 years later, we're trying to have our second kid. And it sounds sad, but it ends up happy. So I'll just say that now. He ended up being a stillborn. I'm assuming it was a he. I'll explain that later on, too. But he was 8 weeks old. He didn't have a heartbeat. So she ended up having to, you know, get it removed. He had to get a DNC. So I go through a hard patch. Her and I both do. I have this weird dream again where I go to that same place. But there was a little boy that was probably about 6 or 7, and he looked like me, and he pretty much told me, "That wasn't the right vessel for me. I'll see you on the next one." So I wake up from this dream. I get sleep paralysis, like I said, every other time. And then a couple, like say probably like a month or so later, I figure out that I'm having a son. So it kind of lines up to the story now where he's about 4 months old now, and I'm waiting until he's about 6 or 7 to see if it was the same face, because then I'll start connecting into other areas and seeing if there's different connections to things. But like my best guess on what I believe that area could be that I've seen twice is either maybe if you believe in there being a consciousness that's everybody, maybe that's like the birthplace of it, or that might be like where consciousness starts from in order to come into bodies.
Now, you saw this entity in a dream?
It was like one of those kind of like dream travel dreams. I didn't see like an entity. It was just my future kid, how I would describe it, like 6 or 7 years old. But it was within the dream state. Like I said, I didn't see myself sleeping. I just was in this place and I saw this kid and I saw this exact place earlier in life. So that's why I started making the connections. And then I got the sleep paralysis directly after, which started again making me question whether or not I dream traveled, it was just a dream, or what it might be. And I'm still, like I said, trying to figure it out. But I'll have way more questions once my kid's about 6 or 7. And I know for a fact if the face is the same or not, because it was one of those very vivid dreams that I remember every aspect of it. And then just a little weird bonus dream that I wanted to throw in here that I've never been able to quite explain. The best way to describe it is dimension hopping, where I would go to sleep and I'd wake up, but I'd be somewhere else and I'd still be myself, but everything would be a little bit different. And I was trying to find my girlfriend, and every single time I found her, she wasn't quite her. It was just like a different variation of her. So then I would try to go to sleep and then wake back up, and then I'd be in the next place. And this went on for what felt like forever. And then when I finally woke up, as far as I know, in, you know, normal reality, I almost didn't want to believe it was reality. And I'm not a very emotional guy, but like I you know, my eyes were tearing up because I felt like I finally found her after this long journey of like weird dream of dimension hopping. But it was probably the most vivid dream I've ever had in my life. I didn't get sleep paralysis after, which doesn't make me necessarily think it was dream traveling, but I still think that there was some kind of a weird connection to this dream, and that's why it was so vivid and so real.
But now, when you say dream traveling, do you consider it the same thing as astral traveling, and do you have any control over when and how you can do it?
Yeah, I'd say it's pretty much the same thing. It's just a matter of your consciousness or soul or whatever you want to call it, where it seems like it leaves this meat suit and you see yourself. Every time I've never been able to control it. It just kind of happens. And I did get into a part in my life where I was trying to
step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Learn how to control my dreams. So I would like put on a nightlight where it'd be in my line of sight. So it'd almost be like keeping a light on, you know, in the back of the house almost. And then when I would become aware of my dreams, I would try to control them, and they would just blast me into a whole other place that I couldn't control. So I'm still in the process of learning how to control the dreams, but the last one that I had that I try to do that with specifically is I have this huge fear of just blasting through space at a high speed. So I was in the dream. I went into this bathroom. I realized that it wasn't my bathroom. I'm like, all right, I'm dreaming. I'm like, I'm going to control this shit. And I don't even remember what I tried to do. But a second I tried trying to control everything, all the walls fell out and I started zooming through space at a high rate speed. And I was trying to wake myself up. And ever since then, I've been like, all right, I think I'll take a little break from that for now. But I'm a firm believer that the dream world is either one, some type of subconscious connection to maybe some kind of source, or two, maybe we have abilities that we don't realize within that dream state because it connects us into possibly a different frequency, which is still kind of where it connects with psychedelics. And then jumping into my psychedelics portion of my story, I guess, I was a big alcoholic for a long time. I almost ended up losing my family over it. I put myself in the hospital. So I heard about a lot of people using psychedelics to try to change their method of thinking and start changing their life. So the first one I started getting into was acid. And I started having that same feeling I did like when something was watching me when I was a kid, but it wasn't scary when I took acid. So I started making these connections where I started thinking that maybe there's more to this world than we believe there is, or maybe it connects you onto a different frequency like you do within your dream state. So I was doing acid for a while. I didn't quite get all the answers that I was looking for. I always used it as a tool. I would do it by myself and I would just search through my head and stuff. So I tried to do mushrooms thinking that maybe that would be the thing, since it's more of a natural thing rather than a man-made thing. The first time I did them, I took way too much. And this is where I was talking about people start thinking you're a schizo or something. But I started hearing this, I don't want to say, it was like a projected thought into my head, but it wasn't my voice that was basically telling me, you didn't respect us, now you need to learn how to respect us. So I ended up going through probably the worst mushroom trip I've had in my life. I was trying to preoccupy myself. So I went, I rolled two blunts, I went outside, I smoked them, I came back in. Somehow that whole process was 15 minutes and I was just stuck in this like endless loop of just trying to figure out like what I did wrong. So by the end of it, I realized that maybe I should try to do it myself, have more of a connection with the plant. So I took time off of doing psychedelics. I learned how to do mycology. I did my own specific batch of them. This was a couple month process. And when I finally got the opportunity to do it, I had that same kind of projected thought into my head, but it was saying, now you understand, now we can show you. So then I got that same feeling like I was saying from when I was a kid, but it was a little bit more prevalent this time, almost like it was closer, like I was starting to get closer to what the answer was and what I was trying to figure out. So the next step that I started attempting to do, which I'm still kind of hearsay at and still trying to figure out, was the DMT aspect, because I've been told that it's like you're kind of knocking at the door with the other two, and once you do DMT, you kick in the door and you're ready to see everybody. So my first couple experiences, I haven't done enough to fully blast off or anything like that, but I just kind of do just a small amount, just enough to kind of start seeing within that visual world, but not enough that you're just gone. You can still kind of see normal everything around you. So this one particular time, I do a little bit, just enough where if I hit any more, I probably wouldn't have been able to stand up. And I notice my cat's staring at my pillow. So I look over in that direction, and on my pillowcase, I start seeing a geometric pattern appear. And within that geometric pattern, the best way to describe it is not in a scary way or in a hurtful way, but almost like the drawings of like the Japanese demons, where they're very colorful. They have like horns and they almost look happy. It looked like that, but with sacred geometry kind of implanted within it. And it kind of did this wispy, like, come here, like kind of hand motion. And as it did it the second time, it kind of vanished into my pillow. And that's when like the DMT started wearing off. And that's kind of where I'm at with the story. I'm still trying to get to the next step and see what it is. But I recently talked to a psychic. I don't know if you know her name's Whitney Fox. And she believes that from all the stories that I've told her about my psychedelics, that I may have some type of shamanic past, because I do come from Native American heritage, where my grandma was 100% Cherokee. So I'm still trying to figure that out, to see if there's a message for me on the other side, or if there's something that's trying to contact me. And call me crazy, but that's what this kind of podcast is for, is trying to find these weird ass answers.
You know, you're not. Well, I mean, you know, I did the same thing. I started through meditation. I actually achieved my goal through meditation, but through that, whenever I did contact what I now understand as my spirit guides, I was instructed that I should try psychedelics as well to further continue my journey and mainly take care of childhood traumas that were there. That's very interesting that a lot of people say whenever they do get in touch with their spirit guides, that's one of the first things that they're told. So I always find that interesting. I want to go back to a second to you said you were cultivating the mushrooms, and I find this so fun and interesting because I was doing this the same thing myself for a while. I was growing the cubanesis, and just the whole process was so fascinating and interesting to me. But the best part was whenever they actually actually you'd get to the point where you could actually see the little pinhead start to sprout, I would start talking to him. And throughout the growth process and, you know, fanning him with oxygen and spraying him down, I would talk to him, make sure they were happy, you know, just give them love and give them a happy environment. And I found that, you know, when I gave them more through certain batches, they would be more potent and I would enjoy the experience a lot more. And I think you told me that you kind of did the same thing for yours as well.
Yeah, actually, when I used to do mine, I had a strict rule where if I had a bad day or I was pissed off, I wouldn't step foot anywhere near them. I used to play them music. I would talk to them. I'd share, you know, ideas with them, dreams with them. Because I have a firm belief that we have a connection to a plant that we don't fully understand, and that all plants are conscious to some extent that we just may not understand because we're used to the way that our consciousness works. But they work in a totally different way, and plants are connected through mycelium. So if there's any plant that's able to speak to all plants, it's definitely mushrooms. And coming from personal experience, I had a friend that used to also do mycology, and I was very specific about, I didn't sell them to anybody. If I had friends that wanted to use them as a tool, I would kind of like, they'd come over and I kind of help them guide through it because I just had a different mentality of it. And everybody would always comment that my one good friend who used to have them, he used to be like a UFC guy, or not UFC, but he used to do like mixed martial arts, stuff like that. He was a generally kind of angry person, that they would notice that his mushrooms would be, we wouldn't get good trips from him. They'd be like very emotional, not stable feeling trips, where then you comes to like my stuff, and I had a bunch of people that had both of ours and would say that my stuff would be a very loving trip, a very welcoming trip. They'd feel like warmth and they'd just feel content with it. And that made me a firm believer as far as like the plants go, that you respect them and they respect you. And then my own personal experience with the plants telling me to respect them just kind of opened up a whole other world as far as like all these different plants and our connection that we have with them, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I truly believe you're 100% correct on that, and that these plant medicines, they were actually put here for consciousness evolution purposes, for whatever level that we were at whenever we discovered these plant medicines. They helped us get to the next level and continue, I believe, to help our evolution. And I think that is why they were made illegal in the first place, because they wanted to stunt human evolution. Terence McKenna came up with the stoned ape theory, that these ancient hominids started, you know, eating mushrooms or whatever, and that's how, not necessarily they evolved physically, but, you know, some of them evolved mentally and started using tools and discovered mathematics and agriculture and all these things. And it's, you know, it's quite a big possibility that is one of the reasons for human consciousness evolution. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it makes sense as far as I'm concerned, too, because prehistoric people would have followed herds of animals in order to live. So where do the first mushrooms come from that people started noticing in North America? They come from, you know, cow poop that's on the ground. So if there were nomadic people that were following around herds, I'm sure they would find poop on the ground and they would follow the poop trails. And what would be going in the poop trail? There'd be mushrooms. So, you know, a source of food that follows within. And from that point, it would make sense, because that's when we started figuring out how to like herd these animals and do all these different things. I mean, it's just a theory, but I feel like it's a very practical theory for sure.
Yeah. And there has been so many instances that were kind of a proof for me that there is much more to these than just being a drug or, you know, a substance that alters your consciousness. And I have a new understanding of what these hallucinations are. And they're not necessarily always hallucinations. I believe that this is altering our perception to where, like you said earlier, we can see into different frequencies, possibly even get glimpses into what's on the other side, at life after death, other dimensions. And I know for sure that it opens doorways to other dimensional entities, celestial beings that are connected to us and always have been, because I've made contact with those beings. And And, you know, I think I actually got a little lucky with mine because I knew how to go in with good intentions and didn't get in touch with anything that was a trickster. I don't think a trickster would have wanted me to take care of my childhood traumas like these entities have and show me the unconditional love and amazing feelings. But what do you think about the possibilities of psychedelics and the connections to other dimensional realms?
I was actually looking into a recent study that was saying that when people take mushrooms, they did a placebo effect type of thing where they had people take mushrooms and they had people that didn't, and then they didn't really like tell them which ones are actually eating the right kind of mushrooms. But what they discovered was that there's actually less brain activity while you're on mushrooms. So considering that when you take mushrooms, anybody that's experienced them, you almost feel like your senses get kicked into high gear where your eyesight, you can notice like you can see things in the dark better, or you hear little intricate sounds better, or everything like that. So if you're forming these crazy hallucinations in your head and you're doing all this crazy stuff in your head, you would assume that there'd be more brain activity instead of less brain activity. So just off of that aspect, I'm a firm believer that it's almost like a key to opening a door where it's almost like an antenna that you connect into these other frequencies, and all these things that are coming in aren't from your brain. And that's why there's less brain activity, is because your brain's working on a more primal level, but connecting into a universe that is something that's aside from ours. Or it may be all around us because, you know, people can only see, what was it, 1% or 7%, some really low number of the light spectrum.
Yeah, yeah.
So we understand consciousness as what we are, but that doesn't mean that there might not be consciousness that's like light consciousness, that's some form of visual consciousness. We just look at everything from our perspective and we don't understand all these other things. But like a good movie that kind of puts that into perspective is there's this movie called Annihilation, and they're trying to understand this creature, and it's just not made of anything that we'd be made of. So it's a consciousness that we completely wouldn't understand. So just off of the sci-fi fact of somebody bringing that up, it definitely makes me consider that there's a lot of things in this universe that we're looking for carbon-based life, but there could be life all over the fucking place, but it's just not carbon-based like we assume it is.
Yes, right on. Now, well, while we're kind of on the conversation of the nature of reality, we got into this on your show, and this is such a fun conversation. What do you think is the nature of what we live on or in? What is this place? I know that we talked about how the model of space that we're presented from the mainstream makes zero sense, and the more you learn from alternative sources and the more NASA lies and shows you fake footage and videos, it's like, where does that leave us? So, you know, there's plenty of great theories coming out right now of what we could be. I consider all of them, but, you know, there's no way that I would ever lock myself into it unless we have, you know, some ultimate proof, which I don't think we would ever have. But it is fascinating how much the traditional model of space just in the past few years have been destroyed by independent researchers. But I'm not a flat earther. I don't think we live on a pancake floating on a turtle's back or whatever they believe. I think this is more of a dimensional realm, something that is non-physical, something that could be holographic. But then again, my perception and my understanding and my theory could change 5-10 minutes from now. You know, you could change my mind with what you say. So I'm always open to what our reality really is and what's going on here. What do you think?
So like you were saying too, I mean, my perception definitely changes depending on when I have more information. But at this current time, I would say my belief as far as this plane that we're in is that we ourselves, I feel, are some type of consciousness, whether it's all together, one consciousness experiencing itself through multiple different angles, or if we're all separate consciousness that's all born from the same place and recycled and live different lifetimes. I think it's some kind of connection between that we are a lot more spiritual and conscious than we think we are, and that we are here to experience things and to feel things. And that's kind of like what I feel the meaning of life is experience, because it's the only thing that's not materialistic that you could take with you. Like theoretically, if you're a consciousness, you may not remember it when you go into your next meat suit, but the one thing that you'd be able to carry with you is knowledge. And kind of a little bit of proof of that is like natural fears, for example. Like there's some kind of connection why we had these things instilled in us. And you'll hear a bunch of different stories about people that, you know, remember their past lives and stuff like that. But I feel like it's all kind of interconnected. I believe that there's multiple dimensions, as far as there might be dimensions with infinite possibilities. Like there might be one where just in the next one over, your hair is a different color. And then the next one over from that could be a bunch of different like light entities. But also going into the dimensional thing, I feel like there's maybe like a sidestep where there might be the slight variations, but there's almost like a transcending step where you get into these different types of existence and beings, where like DMT beings might be like the next step up from us, and then there might be something above them from that. And then there's this other parallel dimension where it's the physical world, how we perceive it, but with just different variations going sideways. I have a pretty extensive idea of what I believe the universe is, but it all kind of links back to us being some form of a consciousness that's living in a meat suit that, you know, we leave it and we come back. And as far as like the world itself, I feel like there's definitely a lot of lies as far as the world itself is built or constructed or what, however you want to word it. I always am willing to hear out flat earth or series just because I'm honestly very curious. But as far as I go, I more so believe that the earth is round, maybe not to the exact shape that they perceive that it is. May not be like a perfect sphere like they depict it to be. But I am a firm believer in hollow earth theories, that there's caves and different caverns and different places within the crust of the earth, because that's why I believe that they hide Antarctica so well, and they don't let anybody go there without government permission. You have to tell them exactly where you're going, because I believe that there's some form of an entrance there. Same with like the Mammoth Caves. There's like particular areas that they won't let you go. And then they're always just finding weird shit within the layers of the earth. So, I mean, they recently, was it probably like less than a year ago, they found an underground city that could house thousands of people in Turkey. Right. So just off of the aspect that people that we know about and talk about in mainstream media were doing these things, it makes me wonder just how deep that goes. And then it also builds into the fact that there's the underwater oceans. So we may think that the Mariana Trench is the deepest spot, but if there's these underwater oceans that are a different buoyancy that you can't even go in them because the submarines will just bounce off the top, I mean, there could be a Mariana's Trench inside of that, where the ocean goes way deeper than we ever even expected. And intermixed within that, there could definitely be a possibility of like Agartha, for example, or all these different inner earth places, especially considering that a lot of ancient civilizations refer to these places. And for me, at least, when I see a connection between almost all ancient civilizations that didn't have contact with each other, but they have a lot of the same theories, like people coming from the sky, people coming from the ground, I start thinking that there's some truth in it. And I'm not saying anything's for a fact because I don't know anything for sure. I can't even say that, you know, that you're conscious is as far as I'm conscious for all I know. But that's kind of where my theories lie. And they're frequently changing the more information I get. And especially being in this community, dude, it's like you hear so much crazy information all the time that it's just like, yeah, most of the time it seems like fact is stranger than fiction, you know?
I was just about to say that. Wow, you took the words out of my mouth. And, you know, seeing that fact is definitely stranger than fiction, and that we definitely don't know exactly what's going on here, what we're doing here. What about the purpose of what we're doing here? There's been, you know, I'd say, let's just to simplify it, there's two kind of main underlying themes we could go. One, that this is a prison or a trap that we can't ever escape, that we're, you know, being used or harvested for our energy by other dimensional entities, and we just get recycled over and over and over for our energy. And then there's the other school of thinking that this is a special realm, a divine realm for learning and experiences, and we are reincarnated here for consciousness and soul evolution. That's the one I kind of lean towards because, yeah, of course, it sounds a lot better than the other one. But I've heard some very terrifying, I guess, information that you could say is from channelers and people who have been in touch with spirit or extraterrestrials. And, you know, they give you some doom and gloom stories about how we're never getting out of here and we're all being siphoned for our energy. Again, I have an open mind to all this stuff. You've heard some of the guests that I've had, so I kind of have to. But I don't make any decisions either way. But it's interesting to think about. What do you think?
I definitely gear more towards the way that you're thinking, just because I like to keep an optimistic approach on things. But I definitely think that the meaning of life is experience. So, I mean, for all we know, we could be some type of consciousness where, you know, you don't feel things like you would normally feel them as a person when you're a physical thing. So it's almost like, I believe it's a possibility that we almost do this almost for entertainment. You know, we're like an interdimensional being that wants to experience like a life of a lesser being. It's almost like people fantasizing about being an animal or an ant. But when you're a bigger consciousness, you're able to do that. And when you do, you may see things as being a bad experience, like feeling pain or feeling this or feeling that. But they're looking at it from the aspect of experience, that if you aren't a physical thing, you wouldn't be able to experience pain. If you're like made of light, you may not be able to experience pain in the same way. So even if it's negative from our perspective, on a grand scheme level, it may not be a negative thing. It may be like a form of entertainment. It's almost like what's the best way of wording it? Like, you have to have pain before pleasure, in a sense. And I feel like that definitely shows within mushrooms a lot of the time, because when you first take them, your stomach feels all bubbly. You feel like you might throw up. And then once it all kind of settles, that's when you're able to enjoy it. So why would it be any different with life? Like, you have to have ups to have downs. And if everything was happy all the time, it would be neutral, and then it wouldn't be happy and fun anymore. You have to have the negative to have the positive. It's the law of duality, man.
Yeah, hey, that makes sense. Man, you know, I might look pretty young to a lot of people, but I'm a lot older than people think. And to have a person like yourself, and so many young podcasters and researchers and authors and even doctors and scientists that I've had on my show that have such an evolved spiritual way of thinking and knowledge and just curiosity about life is very encouraging. I'm seeing, you know, younger and younger people just going into these deep, dark subjects, and it's great. You know, on the other hand, we've got young people who are not quite making the A-list there, and, you know, may not be the sharpest tool in the shed. So we, just like you said, there's this duality, but right now it's a very special time we're going through, I believe. I think this is the most important time in our modern human history where we have a choice right now. And this choice, this, like, it's being thrown in everybody's faces, and you have to make it. You have to, if you're going to evolve and go towards the light, or if you're going to stay devolve and go into the metaverse forever, you know? So have you seen this same kind of evolutionary pattern in people, and how do you feel about where we're headed?
I kind of see the same thing. I feel like we are on the verge of a spiritual renaissance, so to speak, and everybody kind of expects it to be like an instant thing, but I think it's going to be a thing that expands over a couple generations, because in the grand scheme of time, a couple generations of people is nothing, but we're looking at it from our perspective like that's a long period of time. But I'm raising my kids to be open-minded thinkers, so then they'll raise their kids possibly to be open-minded thinkers. And then as it stems down the line, you'll start getting a bigger stretch of people that start thinking in these ways. And as far as like the propaganda getting pushed harder and harder, like this whole, I don't know if you can say it on your show, but the P word, whatever. I don't know. I don't want you to get anything pulled down. It's definitely a time of waking up. And I feel like a lot of the people that haven't woken up from it and realize, just even if you aren't just completely on our side about stuff, but just you haven't questioned anything during COVID, I feel like there's no helping you, which I guess I'm not really speaking to those people, because if you questioned anything during any of that, I guarantee you're listening to these kind of podcasts. And if you didn't, you're not listening to these kind of podcasts. But
yeah,
it's a progression and a buildup that it's never going to change unless everybody instills these things upon their kids in a good way, not like saying push your thoughts into your kid's head. But as far as like part of the reason why I do my podcast is so that there's a chronicle of these different alternative methods of thinking, so that my kids can look at this down the road and they can, you know, get into these sorts of ideas, or at least, entertain the idea that these different things are a possibility and not everything is exactly as school or whatever has told you, because school is already programming you to think of a one word answer for everything, where life isn't like that. There's multiple answers to multiple things. There's nothing in life that has a one solid answer besides math. So like, there's no reason to think about that, especially when it comes to like philosophy and all those kinds of things. You just got to progress. And I heard this metaphor a couple podcasts back and we were using it, but it's almost like there's a wall of consciousness and we can keep chipping away at it or we can give up. But if we want to keep chipping away at it, we have to have the next couple of generations keep chipping away at it and turn this wall into a bridge so that we can walk across it and progress to the other side of where we should be, where even coming into like the psychedelic aspect of things where they're starting to become slowly decriminalized. There's like a negative and a positive to it where I feel like a lot of these plants get disrespected when they get corporatized. But I'm hoping that because of the fact that marijuana and mushrooms are getting decriminalized at the same time, maybe it'll be a good thing where it needed to happen, where corporate companies took over these things just so that they were more widely available to everyone. And maybe if they're widely available to everyone, then people will start seeing these errors, and then maybe we'll regress back away from the corporations, get back into the local connection with things, local connection with these plants, and maybe we can start building ourselves into a bigger, brighter future rather than one of those scary sci-fi futures where everybody's, you know, has a number and pushed into certain directions.
Yeah. Well, one of the schools of thinking in this community is, of course, that those in control, those pushing us to go in these directions, there's one school that they're trying to depopulate and enslave us, of course. Then there's another school thinking, well, they have us, they have their purpose to serve here in human evolution. If they wouldn't be here doing all these evil things, we would just be still sleeping and not waking up to it. Maybe that their purpose is to wake us up through the evil thing. You know, for me, it's kind of hard to think that any of that would be good. I mean, they've been poisoning us for years with our food and medical system. They've been killing us. This wars, that's all they're all about is power and greed and money. So it's really hard to think that they could be doing anything good. But if you look at it in this frame of duality, and if we wouldn't have them, would we be going through this spiritual evolution?
That's what I'm saying too. You have to regress the people in order for a hero to rise is the best way to describe it, where if there's no need for a hero to rise and to speak his message, then there's never going to be, if, like I was saying, if everything's happy all the time and somebody jumps up and says, hey, we need to change our method of thinking, then everybody's gonna say, why? We're content and happy. There's no reason to do that. From what I've seen in my life, I feel like everything happens for a reason. So there'll be some awful shit that happens to you now, but maybe a year down the road, you'll realize that if that awful thing didn't happen to you, this sequence of events that happened afterwards wouldn't have happened, that progressed into something that was better than it ever was before. Like a good example, a lot of people can relate to, is you get fired from a shitty job that you didn't really like anyways. And then what usually ends up happening? You end up getting a job that was better than that last job that you're more happy with. And it's a progression going forward. People just need to stop looking at bad things as like a reason to give up, but realize that maybe it's the dawn of something new, because you need to destroy something in order to rebuild something. And if you keep rebuilding off of an unsturdy foundation, you're just going to get a building with a weak foundation that's going to crumble eventually, and then you're going to have to rebuild it from the start again.
Yeah, well, I think that's we're seeing a crumbling, a falling of an empire, and I just hope that from those ashes, the phoenix will rise, and it's not just going to be a totalitarian one of Borg's slave society where we're going to be subject to social credit systems and more dystopian measures that'll keep us enslaved more. I hope that it's going to be more of a utopian reality, that we can come out a little bit better. But it is definitely crumbling. I don't see that it could be sustainable anymore, especially going at the pace it's going, with as many people realizing that the system doesn't work for them and it's always been against them. And the more people that realize this, the less sustainable the system's going to be. So where do we go from there? I mean, it is crumbling before our eyes. And I don't think that, you know, as a society, we're collectively ready to replace it with anything from us. But I think that the good place to start would be on a individual basis, right?
Going back to a local level, because, I mean, realistically, if everything crumbled, what would happen? Everybody would start worrying about their small communities, and then the small communities would build back out again. So, again, it wouldn't be a bad thing. You have to destroy in order to rebuild. In order to rebuild, you have to start with the small, basic footstep pieces in order to get to the bigger picture. So what that comes down to is government falls, our way of society falls, and we'll go back to local, because then we'll have to rely on our neighbors to, you know, hey, you know how to farm stuff. I know how to take care of animals. You know how to do this. And then you get back to this sense of community and trading back and forth and connecting back with nature, because we've gotten to a point where we're so far from nature that nobody knows how to function for themselves. Like, my dad taught me how to survive in the woods when I was a kid, and that's something I want to do for my kids, just in case. It's just a good thing to know. And a lot of people, it's like you put them in the woods and they've been so scared of the woods because of media and all this kind of stuff, that it's a purpose disconnect, where it's going to weed out the weak and the strong very quickly when it comes down to everybody having to survive for themselves. And it doesn't have to be like a, I don't want to say like a doomsday type thing where everybody's out here with guns killing each other and everything like that, but it could definitely be a utopia type of setup where everybody goes back to caring about each other and trading and, you know, not letting an extra person put their hand into your pocket to pull things out. Like, you know, our government with, we give you the right to work, so that means that you have to give us a third of your check in order to be in this country. Like, nobody ever agreed to that. Nobody wants to deal with that shit. You put your hard work in so that they can steal a third of it. And then what are they doing with that money? Most of the time, they're not doing anything to necessarily help you directly. Your local government, if anything, is doing things to help you directly. So we just need to make that connection again, back to caring about your neighbor, caring about the land, and just caring about where we are. Because if we progressing into this tech future, tech can definitely be a positive thing, because we wouldn't be sitting here podcasting if it wasn't for tech. But things like Neuralink kind of scare me, because my personal opinion, either there's two possibilities with that. Either one, when you die and the consciousness that's stored isn't actually you, but it's a copy of you, where it just makes everybody around you happy, but it's not really you. Or the other option is that this thing actually does capture your consciousness. And then at that point, you're trapped within another reality within a reality, and you may never actually get to experience and see what the broader reality is, which is another reason why I won't get Neuralink, because I feel like there's a connection to that where it may be intentional to make it so that we never really do understand where we came from or what we are, because at that point they could alter it and change it because you'd be within a computer program. And then going off of that, like, who's to say this hasn't already happened in the past and we're not already into something? And then that goes into like Matrix realities as being like a possibility. So,
yeah, for sure. Man, I want to go back to something you said about how in the media and movies, I think we talked about this on your show too, how they portray living in the country as terrifying. You go out there, you're going to get raped by the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, or, you know, somebody's going to kill you right when you walk into the woods. And that's true. Every horror movie since I can remember, the woods are evil. The woods are dangerous. Even the awful horror movies they're making today, man, I tried to watch that new awful Texas Chainsaw Massacre on it.
I will point out, though, that was extremely accurate was the part with the bus, that everybody, if something like that happened, we go, I'm recording you, and pull out their phones and just be slaughtered. Like, that, right. That would actually happen.
Yeah. But it's true, man. They try to scare you to not go into the country when that's the safest and best place. And they always portray people from the country as the stupidest people or most backwoods redneck people that you wouldn't want to encounter anywhere, and they might just rape you. But in actuality, I grew up in a small town in South Louisiana, and man, those are some of the smartest people I've ever known, most common sense. They didn't put up with anything, still don't, with any of the mandate bull crap or anything that they're trying to pull on people. So southern states and, you know, rural areas contain, you know, some of the most smartest people, and they don't want you to know any of that.
Yeah, they're the survivors, that's what it is, because yeah. They don't want you to be like that, because they know if society collapses, anybody that doesn't know how to fend for themselves is going to pull right back and say, please help me, I need your help. Where all the people that are like that will go, okay, you need to eat? No problem. Let me grab a stick. Let me grab some of the string. Let me do this. Here's a fishing rod. Boom. Here's a way to find some food. And then another connection I wanted to make while we're still on this topic is, I've noticed this a while ago, and I find it very interesting, is that if people don't want to believe that you have a natural connection to nature, why is it that 99% of people's houses, the pictures that are all around the house, they're always pictures of trees, the woods? It's because you have this internal need and desire to be in the woods, and you don't know how to quite explain it. That's why you're so entranced by all these beautiful scenes, and why people want to have plants in their house and they want to have pictures of scenery. Like, there's a natural connection, but you're just getting pulled away from it because media is creating this false narrative that the woods are something scary, when, I mean, anywhere can be scary. A city can be scary. The woods can be scary. But if you know how to defend yourself in both means, you'll be fine. But me personally, I would rather deal with a pack of wolves in the woods than a group of people in an alley trying to stab and mug me. Because honestly, like, if I die from that versus that, I'd be way happier getting attacked by a wolf. And I feel like, honestly, it'd probably be way less painful.
Yeah, for sure. And while we're on this topic of kind of being self-sustaining, right now I think is a perfect time for people just to start. You know, a couple of years ago, I wouldn't not have known how to do any prepping or form work or anything like that. But I started because I made myself just start with one thing, stocking up on this and extra food and getting this and learning how to do things for myself, mechanical things. But, you know, it's because I started one little thing at a time that now we've got a whole garden growing. We got all kind of plants. I got weed plants. I mean, I'm pretty almost self-sustainable. And like we were talking about last time, you got chickens, right?
Yes, sir. I got six chickens and two ducks so that I have a renewable source of protein where, one, I could either eat the chickens, which would be my last resort, but I would always have eggs. So no matter what, if there was ever issues with not having meat, whatever, I still have a protein source that's renewable. And my rooster recently passed away, but I'm planning on getting a new rooster at some point. And then after that, theoretically, like if anything happened, I have a way to maintain my chickens as far as food and eggs and all that kind of stuff. And it's like you were saying, you got to start small, baby steps. Nobody's going to instantly one day just be boom prepared to do everything. You got to look at it from like a smaller piece and then build up to where it's at. So if you're interested in getting into this kind of stuff, I'm not saying go set up a chicken coop, but you know, start small, like start a little herb counter, like a little spot on your counter that you start having herbs. And then you'll kind of get an idea of how the plants work. Start a little garden outside, even just going to the grocery store. Time to go to the grocery store, buy like one extra can of a non-perishable food. And then before you know it, you know, couple months later, you might have yourself a little backstock where you might be able to, you know, sustain yourself for a couple months. And you weren't really spending money, but
for I think it was a couple hundred bucks we saved. We went to the store and we stocked up our whole pantry. I mean, just a couple hundred bucks, just one trip to the store. And you can do that in like maybe two or three trips to the store with 20, 30 bucks here, you know, 20, 30, 40 bucks here. And it's easy. And once you do that, you ain't got to do it anymore because just wait for that cataclysm to come, wait for the meteor to hit, whatever, nuclear war, you'll be good.
Even looking on another aspect too, just because of everybody losing their jobs in the beginning of the pandemic, like if you would have had a little bit of a backstock like that, you know, you wouldn't have been as worried about it because you know that at least you'd be able to have some food to sustain yourself for a couple months. So even just for a more real world example, not, you know, just some, oh no, the world's going to end aspect. Like it's always good to be prepared for things, you know?
Oh yeah, man. Well, while we're kind of on that aspect of being prepared, I've done quite a few shows recently that explore the possibilities of that we could be maybe headed towards another cyclical cataclysm. As far as what's caused the past cyclical cataclysms, there's many theories, and there's, you know, you can go from cosmic to earthquakes and mud flood, all kinds of things that may have possibly reset humanity and altered our history even as far back as a couple of years. And I think that we, first of all, might be overdue for our next cataclysm. And I think that these powers, the highest ones in control, may know this. And I think there's a mass preparation being made for this next reset. I believe that we've been reset many times in our past, and I think it could have happened as soon as a couple of hundred years ago. There's a lot of new evidence coming out, a lot of people looking into this stuff, and it's very compelling, the information that has come out recently. And it makes me wonder if it's only a couple hundred years between every major cataclysm and reset, or if they know how to cause a major cataclysm themselves to just force a reset, that they could know something's ahead. Maybe that's why COVID was initiated, all this other stuff. I know climate change is going to be the next big agenda. I can bet everyone listening right now that in the next two or three years, we're going to have some major climate change agendas. They're going to have people wanting to be herded into smart cities more than ever, and away from countries, away from rural areas. And I think that's going to be one of the next big agendas that we see. I don't know. What do you think? What do you think about all that? Where do you think we're headed?
I agree with what you said. I think that they're definitely trying to herd people into smart cities. Like I said, with the whole reset, that they make it so nobody can fend for themselves. So if they reset everything, they're going to pull back towards some type of authority because they need that. And there's a lot of people that do need that. But where we're kind of currently sitting now, as far as like how I'm seeing the truth community grow, I feel like there would be more of a number than what we suspect that would hear those types of things, and their first reaction would be to head out for the country rather than gravitate towards these cities. And hopefully that's what I was saying. Maybe we'll have this enlightened renaissance when they try to do this reset and nobody goes along with it, where everybody in the past always needed an authoritarian figure, so they were more than happy to jump onto this. And just some extra proof, as far as our country goes, like Gen Z and millennials, like pretty much refuse to try to go to war with Ukraine. So, I mean, that's one of the first times that's happened that almost like a whole generation's like, nope, sorry, I ain't doing that shit. So that just shows how drastically people have changed since the past. And hopefully because of that, we'll continue that into the future where we won't get herded. We'll rather run the other way. And like I said, be more interested in trying to start small communities and care about things locally rather than falling into the agenda that they want. But again, you have to destroy everything in order to rebuild something better. So it could all happen for a reason, man. I'm not looking at it as necessarily a bad thing. It's all about a matter of perspective, where I feel like the system needs to crash because it does need to get reset and it does need to get restarted. But we just have to care enough about it that we don't gravitate back into the same old methods and old patterns, and we branch off and create our own new patterns where we go back to being local again.
Yeah, right on, man. What's frustrating for me is how hard it is and difficult it is to tell where the majority of people stand. I surround myself with very like-minded people. I kind of live in my own utopia, and I try not to participate in any bullshit. Whenever I travel to the store or grocery store or just some place that I know is going to have unpleasantness or a lot of people, I consider it, I forgot the guest that said it. She said she travels dimensions when she's doing this. And I think she's made a lot of sense when she said that. It feels like I'm traveling through a different dimension when I'm going interact with these different places and people and things that may not be so pleasant. I just consider it, yeah, I'm gonna take a little trip to this dimension, but I'll be back to my utopia in a few minutes and everything will be fine. But it's hard to tell where the people outside of this utopia that I surround myself with fit in and feel about what's happening, and are they part of this awakening? Because you can't tell from the media. According to the media, everybody's woke. You know, everybody's on the COVID train, on with the agendas. So we will never find out from them. And, you know, many of the people that I surround myself with are the same as me, and they're surrounding themselves with like-minded people as well. I'm just hoping that us doing things like this, the podcasting and putting out information, is spreading enough information and is being contagious enough with this truth that more people are catching on, and the majority of people will eventually, and we can hit that spiritual renaissance like you were saying.
Hey, it might even be something like from a sci-fi movie, because, you know, all the sci-fi movies weirdly relate to things from the future. But theoretically, you have all these people that wanted to gravitate towards the smart cities, and everybody gravitates towards the smart cities, and then say they put a wall around the outside of the smart city, and then they tell you everything outside of that smart city isn't safe. And outside of that smart city would be all of the communities of people like us that are living off the land, self-sustaining. And they're like, no, that's the enemy, don't do that. And maybe they'll leave us the fuck alone. So maybe it'll be a good thing. Maybe it'll be a bad thing. Who knows? We'll have to let it play out. But I feel like if they force people into those cities like that, it would almost create another awakening if COVID didn't already do it for you, where people would go, what's on the outside of the wall? What's going on out there? Why is it blocked off? Why is it so dangerous? And then it might start a new whole generation where those people start pushing back out too. And it'll crumble from the inside, because you can't have power if nobody wants to let it happen, you know? Like, it's like they're all playing chess or checkers on our back, but once we all stand up, like, the game's over, you know?
Yeah, it's true, man. And I think we're hitting that point. We're at a very critical point in human history. And I have hope. I'm very encouraged by what I see, especially by the people I surround myself with, because I can see that the people I surround myself with are becoming more enlightened, and they're becoming smarter, and they're seeking more, and they're part of this kind of wave of an awakening and evolution. And I think that it's a great part to be. You don't want to be on the wrong side of history on this stuff, right?
Oh, hell no. Say, the other thing too is that I had a burp. I lost where I was going with that. I had a good train of thought in my head, and then I lost it as I was going to say it. My bad.
Sorry, my mic was off. No worries at all, man. I do that all the time. But no, I was saying it's very encouraging to see where we're headed. I think that based on the people that I know that are seeking more and are looking for more answers, that I have hopes that people outside of that are too. So we're at a very important time. Just hope we don't get hit by a meteor in the next 10 years or so. Give us at least 10 more years. Well, Shane, this was great, man. Before you head out.
Remembered I was going to say real quick. Sorry.
Oh, go for it. Yeah.
So what I've noticed as far as being into this community is that it's like the farther you go into it, the harder it is to interact with people that aren't on the same wavelength as you. So that being said, nature works out in a way that the strongest survive, so to speak. So maybe we, people like us that are open-minded thinkers, are like the next generation of what people are going to become. And the people that aren't like that are just going to be, so I don't want to say the weak ones, but the ones that will kind of like fade out, because there's this new progression as far as people go, where there's like the people like us that have a hard time interacting with the people like that. So maybe just through process of that, either one, they'll kind of get to a point where they'll either have to hop on the train of trying to understand these concepts or be left in the wayside. So again, it might be a positive thing as we progress through that. Maybe just if all of us increase our vibration, so to speak, that it'll inspire other people that normally wouldn't be into this to start wanting to understand our method of thinking, because we have a whole different way of going about and doing things versus, you know, us having to put on our reptilian masks when we go to the store, so to speak.
Yeah, man. All right, that was great, Shane. We definitely gonna have to do this again. We're gonna get deeper into some of these topics. Before you head out, let the audience know where they can find Inquiries of Reality and what you got upcoming.
So my main way of contacting is that I usually use Instagram. So if you want to send me a message, you want to do anything like that, check me out on Instagram. It's Inquiries of Our Reality. No podcast at the end of that one. And then as far as all my other link goes, so if you want to support me on Patreon, you want to support me on Anchor, you want to donate to the show, help me out to do more of what I'm trying to do here. I recently just started a Telegram chat. So if you want to join that group, just check me out on Linktree. You'll find all the different connections to everything else, which I'll, you know, give them the ad or give them the link. So it'll be down at the bottom. But for anybody that's listening, it would be linktr.ee/Inquiries of Our Reality podcast. And then as far as upcoming stuff, I got some authors coming on. I got a couple different paranormal researchers. I got a lot of cool stuff coming on in the next couple months. And everybody just expect that the show is just going to progress into hopefully a bigger, more professional thing where I can get my message across that, like I was saying, this is just supposed to be a big open space for people that are open-minded to discuss alternative topics. And none of it will ever be shunned upon. None of it will be judged. There's no filters. Any message that anybody has to say, that's what my platform's for. It's for anybody that has anything on their mind that they need to get out into the open. They feel that the public should know. So don't limit yourself. And if you have dreams to start this kind of stuff, I always recommend get out and do it, because I just started this shit 2 months ago, and look at me now. Like, you could be doing the same thing. If you ever have any doubts in yourself, push past it, get it done, because we've all been there. We've all self-doubted ourselves, and we can always use more people in this community, because it's not a competitive community. It's a very accepting community. So if there's anywhere that you should join and be part of, and you want to feel like you're part of a community, this is the one. So make your dreams happen.
Man, I love it. Perfect way to end the show. Perfect note to end on. Shane, that was fantastic. Like I said, we'll do this definitely again in the future.
Thanks for having me on, man. It was really fun.
Oh, yeah. And until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening, and we will talk again tomorrow. We'll see you then.